I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Attorney General Bob Ferguson is walking a fine line between corruption and indifference. Plus, San Francisco throwing the book at pro-Palestine demonstrators. Perhaps we can take a page out of their book. And a key conservative is now putting his support behind Dave Reichert for governor. Will others follow suit? That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here on this Monday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Let me give a spiel before we get into the first segment of the show today. Look, this show is called Undivided. I get comments all the time. Brandi, you don't sound very undivided. You sound very angry and you spend a lot of time going after Democrats. That's true. And one of the things that I have said on this show is it's not called undivided because it's all kumbaya. And I think we should all put our differences aside and agree on everything because that's just not the reality of where we are. I mean, I think we can respectfully disagree on certain things. But, you know, when you look at some of the behavior on the fringes and when you look at just absolute corruption, bias in the media, I really think we can't be undivided until we reject the people who are actively trying to divide us, either intentionally or through their words and through their actions. So that's what Undivided is all about. And yes, I spend a lot of time on this show going after the party in power. And that's because why would I spend my time on this platform going after the party that's out of power? In Washington state, there's one party that's had control of the governor's office for 40 years, and there's one party that has had complete control in Olympia, control of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office for most of the last 24 years. So what's the job of the media? What's the job of the Fourth Estate? Was the Fourth Estate created? Did we have this essential function for our country that's to hold people accountable who aren't in power? No, it's to be an independent check on the people who are in power. Sometimes in some states and sometimes in this nation, that's the Republican Party. And a lot of the time in Washington state, that's the Democratic Party. So I'm not going to waste my breath and again, my platform and whatever influence I might have going after people who are not making any of the decisions that are taking our state down the wrong path. So yeah, sometimes I might not sound very undivided, but one of the ways I think that we can truly come together as a citizenry is when citizens start to be able to identify from both political parties the people who are only in it for power and influence, the people who are in it for the wrong reasons. And when we reject them in favor of people who are in it for the right reasons, that's when we can start to bridge the divides that we face in our communities, in our state, and in our country. So with that as, what did Dory used to say, with all that as mere prelude, let me get into the story that really, I think, rocked us over the weekend. So a little bit of background here. For those of you who couldn't join my last minute 5 p.m. live feed from my spare bedroom on Friday, we're sitting, Nicole and I were both off on Fridays as we typically are. I got kind of I was literally a text that said 911 from Let's Go Washington, just saying, hey, we just found out that in a matter of 2 hours, the state Supreme Court is going to rule on a case that could essentially nullify the initiatives, the Let's Go Washington initiatives. My heart just sank. I mean, my stomach, I felt instantly sick. And the big reason is that was the first I was hearing about it. How was it possible that we soak in these things? We've supported the Let's Go Washington initiatives. How is it possible that we knew nothing about a case that the state Supreme Court was going to decide on in a matter of 2 hours that could derail the entire initiative process that we've been working on for more than a year? I thought, how is this possible? This cannot be real life. So I'm going to take you through, I'm going to rehash a little bit of how things transpired on Friday for those who couldn't make our last minute live stream. And then I want to get to a little bit of what we've learned over the weekend. And I want to read for you some communications I have had since then with the Attorney General's office. They were a little bit, I don't know how I put this. They weren't happy with me over the weekend. Don't care, but I'll read the email communication. And then just literally seconds before we came on live, we got a response from the Secretary of State's office. So here's the deal. So it turns out that for the last several months, there have been not one, but two lawsuits playing out behind the scenes, out of the public eye, both of them attacking not the initiatives and the content of the initiatives themselves, but attacking the way in which the Secretary of State's office validated signatures to confirm that there were, in fact, enough signatures for those initiatives to be sent to the legislature and now to be sent to voters in November. So both of the lawsuits, they're brought by two different groups, but they both did the same thing. The issue is that, remember, six initiatives were passed initially. So there was a lawsuit in the spring, unbeknownst to us, that was filed related to those six initiatives. And then, of course, you had the initiative that was pushed in June and July, which would protect natural gas choice. And so there was a separate group that filed a similar initiative over that. So I'm going to focus on the first one. But keep in mind the two lawsuits that were going through the system together, they have essentially the same arguments. So the lawsuit that we were notified of at the 11th hour on Friday is from a group called Defend Washington. Now, you might wonder, well, how is it possible that, you know, a lawsuit that could derail the initiatives flew under the radar and Let's Go Washington didn't know about it? Weren't they part of it? Well, no, that's the tricky thing. Defend Washington didn't sue Let's Go Washington. They didn't sue the backers or the sponsors of the initiatives. They sued the Secretary of State's office. So in the simplest terms, Let's Go Washington wasn't considered to be a defendant to the lawsuit. So there wasn't, you know, it wasn't like they were served like, hey, we're suing you. No, they sued the Secretary of State's office. And here's the argument that Defend Washington was making. They said the initiatives were certified by narrow margins. And they said in certifying the initiatives, the Secretary of State counted hundreds of signatures by petition signers who failed to provide an address demonstrating Washington residency. The Secretary also counted hundreds of signatures by signers who failed to provide an address matching their voter registration address and by inactive voters. So Defend Washington, in a Hail Mary attempt, because they're absolutely desperate and desperate people do desperate things, they said, hey, you know, these initiatives are going to be on the ballot. Why don't we just throw a Hail Mary and sue the Secretary of State's office and say he didn't do his due diligence in making sure that the signatures were valid, that they had addresses that matched their voter registration or whatever it was. And they're attacking a process the Secretary of State's office has used for years to certify initiatives with no problem whatsoever. So as I mentioned, Secretary of State's office is the defendant in this, not Let's Go Washington. So who is the attorney for Secretary of State Steve Hobbs? Who's the attorney for any state agency that comes under suit? It is, of course, Attorney General Bob Ferguson and his office. Now, that was the case here. So when Defend Washington filed suit against Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, Steve Hobbs's attorney is, in essence, Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Now, there's a couple issues with this. One of them, maybe the biggest one, is Bob Ferguson is opposed to all of the initiatives. He's opposed to the initiatives that are going to be on the ballot. He came out and said he supported the initiative to help police officers pursue criminals. But remember, he only supported it after it became very clear the legislature was going to pass it. But he is opposed to all of the initiatives that are going to be on the November ballot. So, I mean, I'm no like legal expert, but isn't that a conflict of interest? Isn't it a conflict of interest to have an attorney defending initiatives in court that he doesn't support? Right? So that's the big one. The second one is much more complex, but it goes to the issue of, in my opinion, either corruption or indifference. And I think indifference can rise to the level of corruption, certainly. But this is about optics in this case. So Bob Ferguson, again, he doesn't support the initiatives. But even more than that, the person who is bankrolling this lawsuit is a donor to Bob Ferguson's campaign for governor. Doesn't that seem off to you? Let me go through the tangled web here that Defend Washington is weaving. So Defend Washington is all about opposing the initiatives. They are spending millions of dollars to get a message out there saying these initiatives are bad for Washington and they should be opposed. Now, who are the top five contributors to Defend Washington? Civic Ventures, SEIU, Margaret Walker, Campion Advocacy, and Washington Education Association. So those are the top five contributors, the top contributor being Civic Ventures. All right, what do we know about Civic Ventures? Well, the founder of Civic Ventures is a progressive billionaire named Nick Hanauer, who supports a lot of progressive borderline socialist policies. who does Nick Hanauer support in the race for governor? Well, Nick Hanauer has made multiple contributions to the gubernatorial campaign of Bob Ferguson. So Bob Ferguson was the lead attorney in a case defending initiatives he doesn't support, and a case that was filed by a group that is funded by one of his campaign contributors. Does that seem above board to you? Who would that seem above board to? That's truly insane stuff that he wouldn't have recused himself. So then it comes down to this issue of, should Let's Go Washington have been told about these cases? I mean, common sense would say, well, of course they should have. They weren't named as a defendant, but they certainly had cause to be notified, to try to convince a judge that they should participate in the defense, that they should be a party to the lawsuit. Because if the Secretary of State's office lost this case, then it's the initiatives that would be in peril. Potentially, it would have meant sending the initiatives back to the Secretary of State's office to be counted in a different way. Can they do that in time for the deadline for the November ballot to be printed? So the implications for the initiatives and for the 1.2 million Washingtonians who signed on to those initiatives would have been immense. So why wasn't Let's Go Washington notified about the lawsuit? Why did they find out? And by the way, the only reason they found out, you've got these lawsuits that could derail the initiatives. They find out at noon on Friday that the state Supreme Court, the state's highest court, is about to issue a decision in a case that they hadn't even heard of that could upend the initiative process. The only reason they found out is a reporter called them. Jerry Kornfield with the Washington State Standard was perusing these state Supreme Court dockets for a different case and saw these. And that's the first time he'd even heard of them. And he called Let's Go Washington for comment. And they said, what are you talking about? So that's the only reason on Friday why, before the state Supreme Court issued its ruling in something that could upend the initiatives, Let's Go Washington found out about it, is Jerry Kornfield was doing his job on a Friday afternoon and called them for comment after perusing state Supreme Court dockets. So immediately, the question I posed on social media, the question Let's Go Washington posed, is why the hell wouldn't the Secretary of State's office, or probably more fittingly, their attorney, the Attorney General's office, have picked up the damn phone at any point over the last 6 months and let them know, hey, there's a lawsuit challenging the validation of your initiatives. We thought you ought to know. So Bob Ferguson's office has given two different excuses for this, and both of them suck. Both of them are terrifying. And both of them are either corruption or indifference or both. So Bob Ferguson is getting eviscerated on Friday on social media over this. And a couple lawmakers, Dave Reichert is going, I mean, me, basically saying, how could you have left voters in the dark over this? Travis Couture had, you know, said that, put out a tweet saying Bob Ferguson and his billionaire friends secretly went to the state Supreme Court to try to invalidate the voter-backed ballot initiatives. Bob Ferguson responded to that. He said, this is absurd. The Supreme Court agreed with our arguments defending the verification of the signatures. Read our briefs in the thread. Supreme Court dockets are public and published online. Rep. Couture should correct his misleading post, but he probably will not. Similar response to Dave Reichert when he said, Dave Reichert tweeted out, AG Ferguson's decision not to disclose this legal battle to the citizens that qualify these initiatives should terrify all of us. Bob Ferguson responded, Dave, once again, you're blindly reciting right-wing talking points without a clue what you're talking about. Let me be clear, this case was public every step of the way. Supreme Court dockets are published. So get this, guys. This is crazy. Bob Ferguson's honest-to-God initial argument about why all of us were left in the dark is that we weren't left in the dark at all, that we should have, on our free time, been perusing court dockets. And had we been perusing court dockets, we would have seen that there was a case challenging the certification of the initiatives. What human being, even the media included, is spending their time randomly perusing court dockets to see if there's any cases that tickle their fancy? I don't even do that. The only reason Jerry Kornfield was doing it on Friday is he was waiting for a ruling in a different case and just saw this one. Nobody is spending their free time. Nobody from Let's Go Washington is looking through all the county courts, looking at the state Supreme Court or the appeals courts and just searching through all the dockets and the briefs that are filed just to see if any of them are about them. Because they would have every reason in the world to believe that if there were a lawsuit that has been going on for 6 months challenging the validity of their initiatives, that they would have been reasonably notified about it. So that's, I want you to think about how dumb of an argument that is from the attorney general. This was public the whole time. All you had to do is get on your computer and just, you know, decide what court dockets you wanted to search through that day and see if there were any cases of interest. How insane is that? Now, maybe they thought, Let's Go Washington knew. I don't know. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe Bob Ferguson's office and the Secretary of State's office thought, well, Let's Go Washington probably knows about this by now. I'm sure, you know, maybe Steve Hobbs is like, oh, I bet the AG's office told him. And maybe the AG's office is like, oh, I bet Steve Hobbs told him. But here's the thing. They knew Let's Go Washington didn't know. They knew that they did not know. How do I know that? It's in their own legal briefs. In the briefs on this case filed by the Attorney General's office, they attack Defend Washington, the organization that filed the suit, for not letting Let's Go Washington know. In multiple places in the legal briefs, they acknowledge that Let's Go Washington has no clue about the lawsuit, but they argue it's up to Defend Washington to notify them. They said, Defend Washington failed to provide reasonable notice of its request to affected persons, such as the sponsor of the initiatives. They said, at a minimum, reasonable notice should require notice to the sponsor of the initiatives that the injunctive relief would exclude from the ballot. So think about this for a second. Here you have the Attorney General's office, an elected official whose job it is not just to be an attorney for someone like the Secretary of State, but whose job it is to serve the people of Washington. And they're arguing in these briefs, they're acknowledging in these briefs that Let's Go Washington doesn't even know about this, but it's not our job to tell them, it's Defend Washington's job to tell them. Now, legally, that might be true. Legally, it might be the job or the expectation that the plaintiff in a case would notify any part of parties who had have a reasonable interest in the outcome of the case. That's fine. That's fine. Maybe Defend Washington should have let Let's Go Washington know that they were suing over the validity of the signatures on the initiatives. But when we look at this plainly, whose job is it to serve the voters of Washington? Who has more of a duty to ensure that the people of Washington, the voters of Washington, aren't left in the dark? Is it Defend Washington, a group that's seeking to undermine voters and undermine the initiatives? Or is it duly elected officials? Is it the Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs? Is it Attorney General Bob Ferguson? Wouldn't you say that if they knew Let's Go Washington hadn't been told, they knew that this case hadn't gotten any media attention, that there was no information out there about it in the public, and if they're acknowledging in their own legal briefs that Let's Go Washington should be informed, what stops them from picking up the phone? What stops the Attorney General from saying, you know what, Defend Washington hasn't even let them know about this lawsuit. 1.2 million voters signed this thing. They have a huge interest in the outcome of this case. I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to let Let's Go Washington's attorneys know that this case is going on. What stops them from doing the right thing? Doing the thing that makes sense? Is it corruption from AG Ferguson? Is it the fact that this case was brought by a group that's funded by a donor to his campaign? Whatever the reason is, whether it's incompetence, indifference, corruption, it's all bad. And imagine for a second, because the Attorney General's argument here, the primary argument is, well, we won the case. Why do you care? That's his argument. Oh, we won the case. We defended it successfully in court, and the state Supreme Court did agree with a lower court's ruling, and this case is no more. But what if the result had been different? Can you imagine if at 3 p.m. on Friday, the state Supreme Court came out and said, no, the signature validation process wasn't right. And now all of a sudden, all these initiatives that people have spent so much time and money and energy on might not make it to the November ballot. Can you imagine the shitstorm that would have surrounded that? Because people would have rightfully wondered, did the Secretary of State's office miscount these intentionally? Did Bob Ferguson not put up a strong defense because he doesn't support the initiatives and a donor to his campaign is the one who's suing? So by not making this public, they set themselves up for a very serious situation. I mean, probably widespread chaos, distrust, conspiracies had they happened to lose this case. And there is, again, no reason to keep 1.2 million people in this state in the dark until the last minute. Now, I was, I did a live Q&A or a live stream about this on Friday, and we were in the process of reaching out to the Attorney General's office and the Secretary of State's office, and then, poop, in my inbox, I got an email from the Secretary of State's office, and they were not happy with me. Or not the Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General's office. And they were not happy with me. In fact, and I want to read just a little bit of our back and forth on this. This is from Brianna Aho, who's a spokesperson, a communications director for Attorney General Bob Ferguson. And there were a couple people on the email chain. They were sending us the briefs. Hey, we want to make sure you had these, da, da, da. And I did have them by that point. Really nice of them, though. After the case is done, hey, we want to make sure you have these legal briefs. Like, wow, why didn't you send them to me, I don't know, 6 months ago? So the communications director for Bob Ferguson's office said, it appears your commentary on this is deliberately misleading, which is disappointing. Oh, I disappointed Bob Ferguson again. Bummer. They said, our role in this case was as legal counsel to the defendant, the Secretary of State's office. In short, the position we successfully argued was that the signatures are valid and the initiative should be on the ballot. The challenge was related to the Secretary of State's verification of the signatures on the initiatives. The challenge was not related to the substance of the initiatives. Generally, the party bringing the motion has the responsibility to notify the relevant parties. Court rules require petitioners to take reasonable steps to give notice to persons who would be affected by the ruling sought. We argued strongly that by not notifying the initiative sponsors, the petitioners failed to meet this reasonable requirement. So my response to that in part was, because they make a couple points there that, again, to me, don't get them off the hook. And I don't understand why they think it would get them off the hook. And one of the things I said in the email I didn't include it here was, it's never my intent to mislead. And I have shown, I think, over a 15-year career that if I ever put out something that's inaccurate, that I am more than willing to correct it. But I have done nothing on this, on my commentary, that has been misleading, which I'll talk about in a moment. And my response to them was, while the lawsuit was not about the substance of the initiatives, it clearly threatened to derail them if successful. I think we can agree to that. I said, whose responsibility it was aside, since the AG's office was aware, per your brief, that Let's Go Washington had not been notified of the suit by Defend Washington, why not take the simple step of informing them, even casually? Both the Secretary of State and AG's office know how to reach Let's Go Washington's attorney by now. Would a phone call have been out of the question? I said, Defend Washington does not represent the people of Washington and is actively trying to undermine the initiative process. SOS Hobbs and AG Ferguson do have a duty to the people. My central argument is that the 1.2 million voters who participated in these initiatives shouldn't have been left in the dark about efforts to undermine them. Both Hobbs and the AG's office were in a position to ensure that wasn't the case, but opted not to. I said, had the outcome on Friday been different, this would have led to serious questions, conspiratorial or not, about the intent or even coordination with Defend Washington. But I go back to, again, when they say, you know, I'm being misleading by saying that the Attorney General's office kept Washingtonians in the dark. Again, their argument just doesn't hold water when they say that it's the party bringing the motion has the responsibility to notify relevant parties. Court rules require petitioners take reasonable steps to give notice to persons who would be affected. We argued strongly that by not notifying the initiative sponsors, the petitioners failed to meet this reasonable requirement. You argued strongly that they failed to notify them without taking the step of just saying, hey, screw it, we'll notify them. It might have still been Defend Washington's duty, legally speaking, to officially give them notification of a lawsuit that could undermine the initiatives. But there is not a damn thing in the world, and that's the point I made to the Attorney General's office, there is not a damn thing in the world that would have precluded you from picking up the damn phone and letting Let's Go Washington know that its initiatives were in peril. And perhaps that's why they never responded to my follow-up email, saying, was there any reason you couldn't casually pick up the phone and let them know? And let me also be clear on something. I don't really blame the Secretary of State. I think he probably could have. In fact, I mentioned there's two lawsuits going on. One of them was just about the gas ban thing, but it was a similar argument. And I spoke to Greg Lane, who's the head of the Business Industry Association of Washington, which was the sponsor of those initiatives. So Let's Go Washington helps, you know, bring them forth, but they each need a sponsor. And BIAW was a sponsor of that seventh initiative. And he told me, he emailed me when all this blew up, and he said that actually Steve Hobbs had called him the week before last and let him know about that lawsuit. And Greg Lane said, I didn't even think to call Let's Go Washington. I don't know if he assumed they already knew about the other lawsuit or whatever it is, but he was casually told by Secretary of State Steve Hobbs. So I don't think that Steve Hobbs was trying to hide it. I believe that the responsibility would fall on the legal counsel, in this case, the Attorney General's office. I'm also saying that based on Steve Hobbs's track record, he and his office have done an exceptional job for seven initiatives in a short period of time with hundreds of thousands of signatures, getting them verified on a quick time frame, getting them to the legislature, making sure they were verified in time for the November ballot. And he's been supportive and defensive of the initiative process. So I'm looking at Steve Hobbs's track record and his integrity and his honesty. And then I'm looking at Bob Ferguson's track record. And I'm looking at Bob Ferguson, who doesn't support the initiative, who is looking at a lawsuit that's backed by and funded by one of his campaign donors. And so when I decide who do I trust in this, and who do I put more of the blame on, and I'm looking at Steve Hobbs and his history and Bob Ferguson and his history, Steve Hobbs, like, look, I think he should have let him know. I think he had every opportunity to just pick up the phone as well, but I don't think that he has nefarious intent. Bob Ferguson, 100%, I believe Bob Ferguson has nefarious intent. 100%. So I do want to note, we reached out, Nicole reached out over the weekend to the Secretary of State's office with similar questions that we had for the Attorney General's office. Like, why not pick up the phone? Why not let people know? We asked, why did the Secretary of State's office not inform Let's Go Washington of the lawsuit? And is the Secretary of State's office confident that its signature counting process can withstand any future court challenges? So this is from the Deputy Director of External Affairs for the Office of Secretary of State. He said, hi, Nicole, thanks for reaching out. The Office of Secretary of State fulfilled all obligations in defending its signature review process in this public court proceeding and remains confident the process stands on solid legal ground. So again, they use that, they put that word in there, public court proceeding. I get it that court proceedings and briefs and dockets are public. That does not make it a public court proceeding in the true sense. So I'm disappointed with that answer. Because again, none of us are out there perusing court dockets. You can make an argument that, hey, Let's Go Washington's attorney should have been, I don't know, had some system in place to flag them or whatever it is. But there is nothing excusing the fact that a simple phone call wasn't made by the people who are supposed to serve the people of Washington. So I don't like that they're, again, hiding behind that public court proceeding. You know damn well. We didn't even know about it. The only reason, Jerry Kornfield, who's all clued in, who's a great reporter, he didn't know about it until Friday at noon. So don't stop the public court proceeding bullshit. That is such a cover. It would have been so easy for either of these gentlemen. Again, giving Steve Hobbs all the benefit of the doubt that I think he's earned. It would have been so easy to say, you know what? Yeah, we should have picked up the phone. We should have picked up the phone. We wrongly assumed that they kind of knew about it. We were very confident in our legal strategy. We didn't think this case was going to go anywhere. So we kind of thought it was a nothing burger. But yeah, we should have picked up the phone because we know that so many Washingtonians have worked so hard on these initiatives and they deserved at least to know about it. Like, is that so hard? Is that so freaking hard? To have elected officials who actually go to work every day and say, I serve the people. How can I best serve the people today? and you're working on a case like this and you think, and put out how many press releases does the AG's office put out all the time? Oh man, you can guarantee if they were involved in a lawsuit with the Trump administration, they were putting out press releases all the time. Oh, if he's suing Value Village, if he's putting out chicken checks, oh, they're putting out press releases. They're letting people know. But with this one, that's asking too much. Come on, guys. Steve, come on. Bob, I can't appeal to you. So I don't expect anything else from you. But I will say one of the answers I never got from the Attorney General's office that is relevant that they need to answer that we'll follow up with them on today is, don't you think you ought to recuse yourself from these cases? You can argue like, hey, we won this one. But the people of the state have been through so much with initiatives. How many times have we voted for $30 car tabs and then they find some legal way to undo it? So there's not a lot of trust there for the voters of Washington state when they pursue something, when they vote via a process that's protected by the state constitution and they think they're going to get it and they're like, nope, yoink. So I'm sorry, but again, I'm not a legal expert, but call me crazy. You shouldn't be defending initiatives that you're on the record opposing. And you shouldn't be defending lawsuits that are funded by your campaign donors. Like, that's some very, very basic stuff. I would feel more comfortable, and I think Washingtonians would feel more comfortable, if you didn't have anything to do with these cases. And if this happens when there's conflicts of interest, and if the Attorney General's office can turn it over to outside counsel that doesn't have a conflict of interest. So they need to answer that question. Absolutely, absolutely insane stuff. I know we're going to have a lot of questions and comments on that today. You know what's bothersome, Nicole? Hello, Nicole.
Hi.
Nicole was ready to jump out of a pool on Friday. She was being a champ. I was like, listen, can you come in if you need to? And she's in a pool with friends. And she was ready. We were ready.
I was going to try to figure it out. That's for sure.
I mean, if she would have been all in here, wet hair, bathing suit, maybe. I'm great. But thankfully, the state Supreme Court, which, you know, you might be wondering, like, actually, that's kind of a surprise. The issue here and why I think the courts ruled the way they did is, I mean, this was kind of a Hail Mary. But also, it's really fascinating. You have Defend Washington, which is this uber progressive group.
Mm-hmm.
They're arguing that, like, enough verification wasn't done to ensure these are lawful voters.
Right.
At the same time, progressives, like, are against voter ID laws and any efforts to ensure that ballots are only being filled out by lawful voters. So they're taking, like, the conservative argument about verification and all this stuff, and they're trying to use it. And look, they're using it against some conservatives. That's a little bit genius. But also, if the state Supreme Court had ruled in their favor, wouldn't that sort of screw them over on the whole voter ID thing and all of that? Because that would be the precedent, right? Precedents, right? So it's just this interesting thing. I was, what didn't anger me, but what I thought was really funny is here I am on Friday, 5 p.m., worst time. We don't do a show on Fridays because nobody pays attention to the news on Fridays.
Right.
So here I am. It's like a Friday, 5 p.m. news dump. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a live Q&A across platforms or a live report. Like, no, hair's not done. Makeup's not done. Sweating in the spare room / office in our house where we don't have AC. And there was like 30,000 viewers. I was like, how is this like one of our most watched live streams? 5 p.m. on a Friday when I look like hell and nobody usually watches. And I'm like, of course it is. But people care. That's because people were pissed off and they had every right in the world to be pissed off.
As you mentioned, there was one person that I know we're going to go do comments later. Mm-hmm. But Matt Geek says, I am concerned also with the comments about inactive voters. Aren't all registered voters? What does it matter whether they're
So one of the arguments by Defend Washington is inactive voters signed these things. So their argument being they don't vote in elections, yet they're signing an initiative and like that's suspicious or something. No, they probably went to a Walmart and they're like, hey, what's this? Right. And it was right there and they signed it. So you're really going to argue that because you haven't voted in an election in 5 years or whatever it is that you can't participate in the democratic process. So it's just these insane arguments. Yep. But yeah, if you're a registered voter, inactive or active, you have every right to sign an initiative and to have your voice heard. And if you're a registered voter and you haven't voted in 10 years or whatever, you can absolutely vote at any time you want. That's just a ridiculous thing. All right, a couple election things that happened over the weekend we want to update you guys on, and then we'll get to some non-election related things a little later in the show. But so we're dealing with this whole, you know, Dave Reichert, he needs to bring people in. Can we get to the Dave Reichert statement first? He put out a long tweet. I'll read a good part of it for you. You know, it's going to take every single person who didn't vote for Bob Ferguson in the primary election to vote for Dave. I mean, he has to bring everybody in. Mark Mullett supporters, Sammy Bird supporters, people who voted for one of the other 30 candidates in the race. And so he needs to appeal to them. And that's his job to do. He's got to go in and he's got to bring people into the equation. He said on social media, 28 individuals ran for governor in the primary. This means thousands of votes went to candidates other than me or my opponent, Bob Ferguson. I want to speak directly to the folks that chose another candidate in the primary. We may not agree on everything, but I promise you there is more that unites us than divides us. I'm sure we can agree when it comes to the cost of living and crime, Washington is on the wrong track. Bob Ferguson is the status quo. He will not correct course. Bob Ferguson supported decriminalizing fentanyl. An average of 52 teenagers die from an overdose in Washington each week. That's more than double the national average. Our cities have been taken over by tent encampments, and he goes on and on from there. So, you know, I think he has a good point there. You know, Bob Ferguson is under 50% of the primary vote. Certainly he performed fairly well, but when you're under 50%, if we can keep him there and make sure that people who said, who made a conscious choice not to choose Bob Ferguson, that tells me that they want something other than the status quo. And so that person would be Dave Reichert, right? But there's this ongoing challenge with what to do about the Sammy Bird supporters. Sammy Bird got 10% of the vote. I think that's where he was at last time I checked. That's no small number. But at the same time, 10% does not make a general election candidate. And he ran a longer campaign than anyone else. And that's what he was able to achieve. Now, Dave Reichert still needs those voters. But I'll tell you, you know, a lot of them on social media are saying, you know, I supported Sammy, but now I'm going to go with Dave and we've just got to beat Bob. But there's this kind of holdout crew that thinks Dave Reichert is a rhino and is the same as Bob Ferguson, which is just insane. Now, I don't know if there's any convincing them, but I will say someone who that group, that subset of voters respects an awful lot, did the right thing this weekend, came out and endorsed Dave Reichert, and that's Joe Kent, who's a congressional candidate on the Republican side in the 3rd Congressional District. He said, I supported my friend Sammy Bird in the primary. I'm now proud to endorse Dave Reichert for governor. The stakes are too high. Republicans must unite and focus on victory in November, not infighting. Time to unify, reach out to independents, and save our state and our nation. Amen. So I think that's great of Joe Kent to do that. I think it matters to a lot of, you know, very, very tried and true conservatives who've supported Sammy Bird and are having a hard time for whatever reason supporting Dave Reichert. But the question is, what will Sammy Bird do? And I think it matters. Like, I don't, you know, and I've said this, I don't think he has to endorse Dave Reichert. You know, if he doesn't want, there's nothing saying that just because it's a person of your own party, you got to turn around and endorse them. But what concerns me is that he will continue to fan the flames of division. He came out the day of the primary and said, I'm not endorsing Dave Reichert. He doesn't align with my beliefs whatsoever. He said something to that effect. But then he came out. So he's already said, I'm not endorsing Dave Reichert. Well, then he came out and there's been a couple posts that have hinted at something happening on Wednesday. He said, endorsement announcement. Join Semi on Wednesday, August 14th on our Common Sense podcast, where Semi will share an important endorsement announcement and discuss the next steps toward fighting for truth, justice, and saving our republic. You know, in his tweet before that had been something kind of like low-key jab at Dave Reichert's campaign. And so I just don't know what this is. There's some diehard supporters of his who are saying, Sammy Bird's not done. He's going to need all of our help. Stay tuned. I really hope that Sammy Bird doesn't endorse some sort of write-in candidate. Write-in candidates don't have a chance. Sammy Bird can't be a write-in candidate. That's against the law. We have something that's known as the sore loser law, where you can't run a write-in campaign for an office you appeared on the primary ballot for. So, you know, anything... Again, I don't expect him to endorse Dave Reichert, but endorsing any sort of other candidate at this time is just, we just got done talking about how dangerous Bob Ferguson is, how he genuinely doesn't care about the people he serves. There is such a long list of reasons why we need to defeat Bob Ferguson in November. So I really hope, you know, similar to Joe Kent and what he put out, I hope people understand that, you know, you might not agree with Dave Reichert on everything, but he's certainly better than Bob Ferguson, and we cannot continue down the path we're on. So I really hope Sammy Bird takes a few deep breaths, looks in a mirror. You know, good candidates, when they lose, they ask themselves what they could have done better. Bad candidates blame other people when they lose. So I hope if Sammy has thoughts on continuing in Washington politics, that he really, you know, takes a hard look at, okay, why didn't my campaign, which was very long, why didn't it catch on with enough people? And what can I do better next time? So I guess that's all we can hope. One other race I just had to update you on, not the results that we necessarily wanted to hear, but last week an interesting race was in the Lands Commissioner race, which it looked for a while like two Republicans, they were going to edge out Democrats who had run just one too many candidates, and they were all splitting up the vote. So for the first few days after the primary's ballot results came in, the two Republican candidates were in first and second. That has now changed. Dave Updegrove has just squeezed out Sue Kiel-Peterson by just a little bit. But I just don't, you know, King County's a big county, and he's doing pretty well in King County. I don't know if I see her being able to overtake him again with the amount of ballots that are left to count. So it seems pretty likely it's going to be Jamie Herrera Butler and Dave Updegrove in the general election for lands commissioner. I will say, though, I don't know what the window of time is. I'll have to look at this and maybe, but there is an opportunity to cure ballots. Just check if you haven't already on the Secretary of State's website that if you cast a ballot, your ballot was counted. If it wasn't, you should have been contacted about an opportunity to cure your ballot. Maybe there was an issue with the signature, etc. So you should do that anyway. But if you really care about this race, like every single vote matters. But we'll continue until everything is finalized and certified to watch this race. But it does seem like what Republicans were really excited about probably is not going to come to pass in that race. All right, coming up next, how can Washington State and voters who are frustrated with the direction of things, can we give them a little hope? I think we can give them a little hope that things can change. It's happened in other states that were solidly blue or had, you know, one party control. And so I want to talk a little bit with a special guest about what we can do in this state to change things ever so slightly. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He said, you know, the interest rate thing is obviously a big deal right now. Interest rates aren't great, but there's not a lot of inventory on the market right now. So if you know, like in the next 6 months, you're thinking about selling your home anyway, this might be the point where there's the least amount of inventory, which means that you're going to have more eyeballs on your home, more of those bidding wars, et cetera. Here's Wes.
King County, median $1 million. Homes are still selling very, very quickly. If you want to do something this year, give me a call. I'd love to start the process now. I think that things will be moving very swiftly through probably October. And then as the election starts to come out, you know, get closer, people always pump the brakes. But for all of you who are out there that are thinking like, oh, you know, I can't sell my home because I need X amount, you're probably at the peak right now. You know, it's probably worth more than it's ever been than previous times. So what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? You can start by using their home value calculator at sellwithwes.com. You just plug in your address. They can tell you how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Also, Wes can give you a free market analysis. You know how your home is positioned depending on the neighborhood, etc. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So speaking of Future 42 and our partnership, as you guys know, I'm an ambassador for Future 42, which is part of Project 42. You know, there's one thing for us to kind of sit here and like complain about the direction of things, and I do that a lot. It's kind of my job to complain, etc. But there's a group of people in Project 42 that are trying to lay the groundwork for actually trying to make meaningful progress in our state and, you know, try to get rid of this kind of one party rule and bring balance and common sense back to the state. And I mean, you know, they are doing so many things to try to recruit good candidates for public office and judicial races and other elements of just trying to come up with an actual plan and strategy. Like not just complaining, not just hoping and wishing that things will change, but an actual plan and make sure it's well executed. It's something that happened, the framework, I just want to give you some background here because I think it's interesting. And I'm going to talk about an event we were at over the weekend. This actually happened in Colorado. There was a group, so Colorado used to be pretty solidly red. And then a group came in, they did this strategic planning, strategizing, and over the course of several years, they managed to successfully turn Colorado blue, and they get a lot of credit for that. So this Project 42 is actually built off the framework of what happened in Colorado. So they've got all these groups, capacity groups like Future 42. But over the weekend, Nicole and I went to Project 42's annual dinner, and I'm just so proud to be part of what they're doing. And that's where former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker spoke. So you'll recall he was in our studio last week and he was in town. And that's because he was coming to speak at the Project 42 event. And Scott Walker is a really interesting person and a good case study in how to turn a state around. So in Wisconsin, it had been years and years since a Republican won the governor's mansion, but he was able to do it. And he held the governor's mansion in Wisconsin for two terms. And so that's what he came to talk to Project 42 about kind of how he was able to do that by focusing on good policies, which is key. But he stopped here and I wanted to play a couple of clips that I haven't played yet of our conversation. And that's about like how we can use the example of what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin and maybe give people a little hope here that if he could do it in Wisconsin, we can absolutely do it here. One of the things that we discussed are the initiatives. In fact, he does a Washington Times column semi-regularly, and he wrote about the initiative process and the Let's Go Washington effort here. And he said that's just a great example of how when you get people excited about something, it can lead to change.
You know, you wrote an article recently for the Washington Times about our state and the initiatives that were very successful here. Four of them will be on the ballot now in November. Why is that something that you talked about?
Well, I just, having been here before, loving America, not just one state over another, but I just think so often people get pigeonholed into, well, oh, that's a blue state, therefore everybody thinks the same way. And that's just not the case. I mean, a good example is one of the latest things that were added to the ballot is a question of having access to natural gas. Mm-hmm. Well, my goodness, just this week there's a report out that natural gas is at its lowest, when adjusted for inflation levels, it's been in 20 years, and arguably, if you look, probably lowest ever for an energy source. So it's abundant, it's clean, it's affordable. You can actually get for a similar amount, you can actually, it's cheaper than buying a bottle of water in terms of just its usage out there. And no matter what people feel, I always say, I'm an Eagle Scout, so I was taught a long time ago, your campsite should be cleaner when you leave than when you went there. So I want to have a country and a world that's far better off than what we inherited from prior generations. But we have to insert some common sense here. And I don't think common sense, there's a quotient on common sense, whether you're Republican or Democrat. So I was pleased to see one of the polls showed something like three quarters people polled in the state on this particular initiative question thought it made sense. And so it's just one of those where no matter what happens in your state capital, no matter which party's in charge, there should be an opportunity for people to have a say as to how they want to live their lives. And these referendum questions are a good example of that.
Yeah, and I think they did some sort of analysis based on voter information, and more Democrats and independents actually signed onto those initiatives than Republicans did. And so when you say, you know, it's not about pushing like conservatism per se, but common sense solutions, I'm curious kind of the advice you have for our state in this position. We're in very blue state. That's obvious. You know, we have a gubernatorial candidate, Dave Reichert, who's kind of a once-in-a-generation candidate for Republicans. And then we have Bob Ferguson, the current attorney general, who I think would take our state absolutely to the point of no return. How do you start to sway? Going back to your experience in Wisconsin, how do you start to bring along the middle and disaffected Democrats?
Well, one thing I said frequently in my campaign and even said as the start of my time as governor in my inaugural address was moderate in tone, but not in action. I think one of the mistakes that people made, and that's, it's common, not just here in the state of Washington, but on social media, certainly, particularly on X, but overall, even years before, maybe a little bit on cable news, but the people get the most attention are the people who say the wildest things on either end of
the
spectrum. And so the challenge with that I found in the year 2000, so hard to believe that's 24 years ago, I still remember in that presidential race, folks involved in Wisconsin, but with the national campaign, told me that Washington, West Virginia, and Wisconsin were considered to be key battleground states at that point.
Wow, yeah.
24 years ago.
Yeah.
West Virginia's gone really, really right. So they're a very, very red state. Wisconsin is still probably the, not just one of, maybe the battleground state, at least in presidential politics. And obviously Washington, at least in the top of the ticket for the presidential stuff, has consistently gone very, very blue. But that's in a matter of just, you know, less than a generation. And so I think the key is, part of it's just tone. I found in talking to people, even with our reforms, for example, when we took on the teachers union, there were a lot of Democrats who'd say to me, oh, we've thought this for years. We thought they were out of control. We thought some of the things in the school systems weren't right. But they had such a lock on traditional Democrat politicians that there was no way to make a change. And we made the change. It was amazing how many people came out of the woodwork. But again, it was tone. It was, make a clear, convincing, compelling case. But I always said when I first ran, don't talk like you're on talk radio. Don't talk like you're on Fox News. Talk like you're sitting in someone's kitchen with a cup of coffee or something else. And you're just talking to a neighbor about why you think this is important.
Yeah. Is it a bait and switch, though, to say, well, you know, moderate in tone, but not in action?
Well, I think but I think in that case, though, it's what I found from a lot of voters, particularly swing voters in our state, people voted for me and Barack Obama in the same year. Hard to imagine. But for them, it wasn't. They didn't say, well, wait a minute, you didn't say you were going to do that. We actually did the thing. In fact, that was one of the more compelling things when I faced a recall election years ago. Yep. And then the following reelection was voters to say, I don't always agree with him. But he tells me what he's going to do, and he goes out and does it. And so I just think there's a sense, particularly in a world where not the state of Washington, but the state of Washington, D.C., where so many politicians in both political parties, you know, get all stirred up, but nothing happens, that voters are okay supporting candidates who may not share every one of their beliefs, but who they believe has the best intentions in mind and who's got a clear long-term plan and then acts on it.
Yeah, 100%. So one of the other things, and it's just this piece of wisdom I took from him, I wanted to share with all of you guys. In fact, I spoke at the Project 42 dinner, and I brought up this thing because it stood out to me of everything we talked about. In the interview, you know, when he took office, there were a lot of, I think it was like 100,000 protesters who showed up outside the governor's mansion, you know, trying to intimidate him and stuff like that. And one of the most important things that he learned that I think elected leaders in Seattle and in our state can learn as well is, you know, sometimes the loudest people represent a really small minority of the populace that you signed up to serve. And if you can remember that and really focus on, you know, not the loudest voice in the room necessarily, but how can I do the most good for the most amount of people, that will go a long way. So here's a story he told about that.
During the height of the protests, when they occupied our Capitol for about a month, I remember the press got bigger and bigger, and eventually there was someone from NBC News there along with other networks. But I remember this particular question. She said, well, you know, do you hear the protesters outside? Don't they have a right to be heard? Because they would get loud when I'd go live and on these press conferences. I thought, okay, that's a fair question. I said, absolutely. That's what's great about America. You can petition your government without fear of retribution. You know, we're not going to put you in jail. We're not going to do bad things. You have every right to petition your government. And that means including a protest as long as it's lawful, a true protest, not a riot. I said, but there's maybe 100,000 people here right now, of which half or less are from Wisconsin, but assuming they're all from there. But the last election, almost 2 million people sent me to this state capitol to do the things I'm doing. And just because they're here not protesting, I'm not going to let these voices drown out the voices of the nearly 2 million people who elected me to do what I said I'm going to do. And that's why I'm doing it.
Good for you.
And it was just good because sometimes we get in such a vacuum. You know, this experience I've worked in media before as well, is that sometimes we get so caught up in the moment. It's why the left typically gets so engaged in these high-profile protests. And, you know, as a role, as American, you can do that. But don't lose sight of all the other people, you know, back at work, back at school, back at the hospital, back on the farm, back on the ranch, playing cards at the retirement club, in school, wherever it might be, who are just living their life, and they're not the voices of the people that are the loudest protesters out in front of your event.
Yeah, so we just wanted to play a little bit more of, we've been playing clips from his interview, so I thought that was a good good advice for you know, Republicans certainly, but anyone who wants to try to bring balance back to the state of Washington about, you know, just laser focused on policy issues, good policy, making good on your commitments, and making sure that you're not just reacting to what the loudest voice in the room wants you to do. So that's how we win back Washington. Some good advice there for Dave Reichert if he wants to take it. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter so you can get alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Why? You could save some money. And all of us need insurance. You might be thinking, well, I'm trying to figure out my family's budget.
I can't get rid of my insurance. No, but you can make sure you have the insurance you need to cover what you need it to cover, and also that you have it at the best possible rate. So if you don't have an insurance broker, especially right now is the best time to get one. First Mark Insurance doesn't charge you anything for their services. Totally free as well to take the First Mark Challenge. We have so many Undivided viewers and listeners who've taken the First Mark Challenge and saved money. Ben and Leslie saved $1,500 a year. Casey in Covington says they saved him 37% off his auto quote, which is awesome. And I, you know, have also heard from people who took the First Mark Challenge like Netta, and they didn't end up, they just told her the truth. Like, hey, you should keep the insurance that you already have. Like, you don't need us, essentially, which I also think is good. And it's a sign of an honest company. So do what so many Undivided viewers and listeners have done. And that is join the First Mark Challenge. But it starts by join the First Mark family. But it starts by taking the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. We said this is what should happen to those crazy rioters who block freeways, stop the populace from moving from place to place. They should be charged with unlawful imprisonment, because that's what you're doing. You're prohibiting another human being from being able to move about freely. That should be a charge of unlawful imprisonment. Well, of all places, San Francisco agrees, and they are now throwing the book at pro-Palestine demonstrators. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Man, I love this. San Francisco, like, they went woke and broke and they were a joke, and now they're just like turning things around. I mean, slowly. But honestly, I mean, they've seen how bad things got and now they're trying to go in a different direction. I will give them credit for that. So this from the San Francisco Standard, and it's about the pro-Palestine demonstrators who a few months ago blocked the Golden Gate Bridge. And so people, the traveling public was stuck on a bridge, which I've got to say is kind of freaky. Of all the places I wouldn't want to be stuck, a bridge like the Golden Gate Bridge would be one of them. That's like,
I mean, it's a pretty view.
That's the stuff of nightmares right there. So the headline from the San Francisco Standard, DA throws book at Gaza protesters over Golden Gate Bridge shutdown, charges 26 with false imprisonment. It says the San Francisco District Attorney's Office announced the charges against the protesters early Saturday, saying the April 15th demonstration went beyond an exercise of free speech and endangered members of the public. Eight of the protesters stand accused of a count each of felony conspiracy, trespassing, obstructing a thoroughfare, refusal to disperse a riot, and failure to obey a lawful police order, and 38 counts of false imprisonment. 18 others are charged with misdemeanor versions of the same charges. It goes on to say, and some of these stories are crazy, but we talk about this, you know, when they blocked I-5 in Seattle, we would just kind of pontificate about, think about if somebody's having an emergency on the freeway or something like that. Well, it actually happened down in San Francisco. It says the affidavit describes how the California Highway Patrol spoke to more than 200 people who were negatively affected by the demonstration. The Highway Patrol identified 35 who said they missed work, important medical appointments, or flights. One affidavit cites one woman who missed a pre-op appointment for brain surgery to remove a tumor in her temporal lobe. Another woman told investigators she ran out of water for infant formula and missed a pre-surgery doctor visit for her baby. One woman cited in the affidavit said her disabled child was stuck on a school bus for hours on the bridge. A surgeon told authorities she had to reschedule a procedure plan for that day, and at least two people said they had to relieve themselves in their cars because they were trapped. DA Brooke Jenkins said in a prepared statement, "While we must protect avenues for free speech, the exercise of free speech cannot compromise public safety. The demonstration on the Golden Gate Bridge caused a level of safety risk, including extreme threats to the health and welfare of those trapped, that we as a society cannot ignore or allow." I mean, for the love of God, I'm shocked that it had to be San Francisco first. This is exactly what should be happening in Washington State. We had the I-5
the protest on I-5 that I think it was blocked for like 5 or 6 hours right before the exit to a trauma care center in Harborview Medical Center. There were ambulances that were rendered out of service in the backup. We had them block the only road into SeaTac Airport where people had to get out with their bags and luggage and pilots, and they had to walk the rest of the way to the airport. That's domestic terrorism, but since there isn't technically a domestic terrorism charge federally, it should be unlawful imprisonment. That's what it is, right? You're obstructing the ability of another human being to move about freely. And until you start to throw the book at these demonstrators, nothing is going to change because they live to be arrested. They love the failure to disperse. Some of them got long rap sheets of failure to disperse. They've been through Occupy. They've done the May Days. They've done the Black Lives Matter protests. They did the Chaz and the Chop, and they get arrested for all these misdemeanor crimes that they may or may not actually be prosecuted for. What is the one I like the most? Oh, gosh. It's like the charge they throw at people when they, like, block a sidewalk. It's some dumb charge, but then it never gets actually prosecuted. I'm struggling to remember what the charge is. But then the city attorney's office, the old one at least, wouldn't do anything about it. So they don't care. And they love the pictures of them in handcuffs and, oh, and then they're out like within minutes. But when you're talking about a felony charge of unlawful imprisonment or felony conspiracy charges, you're talking about, hopefully, hard prison time. And I promise you that these protesters aren't that hard. I promise you that 99% of these protesters do not want to actually face hard prison time felony charges. And they're the same people. They're the same people at everything. Like I said, the same people who were at Occupy are the same people who were at May Day causing trouble, are the same people who were at Chaz and Chop causing trouble, are the same people who are pro-Palestine protesters. So if you threaten them with felony charges of unlawful imprisonment for doing this, 99% of them are going to stop doing it. So do what San Francisco did. Man, pigs must be flying, because now Seattle has to take a page out of San Francisco's playbook. But nothing is going to change until you do that. So San Francisco, unfreaking believable. All right, there's a lot of stuff going on globally, certainly nationally. Last week, we started off the week with just a huge tank in the stock market. You've got global unrest, rising cost of living, a volatile 2024 presidential election where the headlines on it change like every 2 weeks. So if you are planning and saving for retirement, which I hope every single one of you are, the question is, do you have someone managing your money who is monitoring all those things, who is reacting to all of those things? Managing risk is what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capitalize specialize in. In fact, it's their number one focus. Zach is also the host of Know Your Risk Radio podcast. You can check it out, knowyourriskradio.com. But again, he hosts a show about it, managing your risk. And that's what Bulwark Capital specializes in, managing your risk. You only get one retirement. You do not want to put it in needless risk. I mean, there's always risk associated, right, with your retirement portfolio. That's just part of the gig. But is it needless risk? And that's what Zach and his team can help identify. You only get one retirement. Do not put it at risk. You've worked so hard for it. So you can learn about Bulwark strategies, investment strategies with their free common sense investing guide. You can get yours by going to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. All right, a little bit of national news. Trump's going to be on Spaces tonight on X. That'll be good. A conversation with President Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And this is the kicker. It's hosted by @RealDonaldTrump, which, you remember, he's been off Twitter for some time. And I get that. I think part of it was like, you know, because Twitter didn't treat him fairly when it was Twitter. But then he started his own social platform. So it's like, why would I use the competitor's platform? But now he's going to be back hosting a space.
Oh, he's already back.
That means he's back on X. He announced, did he put out a video on X?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's watch it.
This is the final battle. With you at my side, we will demolish the deep state. We will expel the warmongers from our government. We will drive out the globalists. We will cast out the communists, Marxists, and fascists. We will throw off the sick political class that hates our country. We will rout the fake news media, and we will liberate America from these villains once and for all.
So there you have it. And he's put out a bunch of stuff. I mean, he's not just back on X. I was looking on his thing. It's like, oh my God, they put out like
10 tweets today. Now he's just going to town. I kind of miss his tweets.
I know. I'm kind of excited.
Because I would never, did you ever do Truth Social?
I'm on it. Yes.
You so are.
For us. Like, wait, to you're keep on an it for eye us? On it. No, as myself, but I'm doing it for us. Like, I've kept an eye on his tweets and stuff.
Yeah, because the last, like, tweet he had put out, I mean, he did one in 2023, just sending people to DonaldJTrump.com with his mugshot. But before that, the last one he had put out was January 8th, 2021, mm-hmm. where he said to all those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on January 20th. I used to hate his mean tweets. Now I'm kind of like, I don't love them. I don't want to be mean to people. But also, you need to be on X. X is, mm-hmm. I mean, just to give you an idea of like X as a platform, you guys know that, 3 weeks ago we started streaming on X? 2 weeks ago? So we started streaming the show live on X. I have a fraction, I want to say maybe we have 100,000 followers on X. Well, I have 185,000 on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Far more people watch on X. On Facebook, they absolutely kill us in the algorithm. Like, I used to get easily 500 like shares per post, like minimum. And now I'll be lucky if it's 5.
I know.
And we'll be lucky if we break 100 on our, we have 185,000 followers on Facebook. We'll be lucky if 100 people are watching on there on the live stream.
I know.
It's insane. Very suspicious. And more people watch on YouTube, and we have, YouTube was our newest platform. I think we maybe have 30,000 subs on YouTube. So it's fascinating that, you know, Twitter X under Elon Musk, it's clearly not doing the same thing to voices perceived as conservative. And our first day streaming the show live on X, we had maybe 1,500.
Yeah,
and that's just insane compared to Facebook.
I hope he takes Scott Walker's advice that he told us about. He said he's been giving Trump advice. And I hope he takes some of that kind of to lay off the, you know, just attacks and just kind of focus on the messaging, which we also, you know, I mean, we hope everybody does that. Focus on what you can do better, what people want to hear. But I do like ads like that. Go to town, because I think his ads, that's where he gets it right, man.
Yeah, I agree. And 100%. I mean, there are so many. I mean, he's been running a terrible campaign ever since he got shot. I'm sorry. The campaign has been crap. And even Scott Walker agreed. And Scott Walker has talked to him about it. And like, you know, focus. There's so many policy failures for Kamala Harris and the media. It's insane to watch the media like, oh, look at Kamala Harris crowd size over and over. And every time Trump has a big crowd, they always talk about how it's, oh, the crowd, there was empty seats. It's wild to watch the bias.
It is
it's
wild.
Like they and both get pretty big crowds.
So I'm not sure if it's all campaign or it's the, I mean, it is this group effort by the media, by
100%.
Everyone to up Kamala Harris. And I just don't buy the polls. I think we're back to the Trump versus Hillary stuff where they thought he was going to, you know, get crushed by her because the polls said so. And I just think that there's this, if you were voting for Trump 3 weeks ago, there's no way in hell you're voting for Kamala today. So if you think that it, like, Biden was doing such a bad job that you think Kamala is going to be different, that's not happening. And I just don't believe those polls. So it's definitely this group effort to make people excited, to make people feel this thing's on fire right now. And I think I would like to hope it all comes crashing down.
It's very artificial, but that doesn't mean that Trump is doing a good job campaigning. They're focusing on these very artificial things about Kamala Harris. I get it, but that's not how you win over independent voters. You talk about her lack of a record on the border, the crime crisis. You talk about the economy. It's the economy, stupid. So they need to, both him and J.D. Vance, they need to get off these. And there's like this Tim Walz stuff about stolen valor. I think that's important.
Yes.
The media is absolutely like burying it. But and it's
is
like,
he
no.
focusing on it, or is that the only question he's being asked about?
No, well, so he was asked, he did an interview, J.D. Vance did an interview with Dana Bash, where she was asking about something else, and he kept bringing it back to Tim Walz, because she was saying, you know, you're criticizing him for this, but he did serve 24 years, isn't that honorable enough? And he's like, no, it's a stolen, and so he kept bringing it back to that stolen valor thing, so he's trying to make it about that. The Dana Bash interview, I'm disappointed in Dana Bash, it was incredibly biased. It's like she's making the Democratic argument, like, in it's very strange.
They're all doing it. It's crazy. So I'm excited for a debate, because I think that will allow them to be them. Whether go to town, if she can do good on it in a debate,
she's
go
done
for
well
it.
In debates.
She has. All the time.
I thought she did a pretty good job when she was running
for
president.
1%.
Well, I know, but she had some good debates. She's better at debates than she is in an interview, and that's why she hasn't done. But she hasn't done a sit-down interview.
I think they'll be asked about policy more so than the party stuff that that they, you know, when she's up against all of the other Democrats, when they're just doing party stuff like that, I think you can get away with some more stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you have to debate Trump, who's got the knowledge, I don't think she's going to come close.
Yeah.
But,
does he have the knowledge? I think he has it, but he's very bad at articulating it.
Yeah.
In a way that's like he gets off track really bad. So he needs to be more disciplined. Mm-hmm. He also needs to let her talk, because she'll bury herself, similar with Biden, but for different reasons. Biden would bury himself because he'd just float off into the ether somewhere.
Right.
Kamala Harris will bury herself if he lets her talk, because she doesn't know the policy issues. Right. She absolutely does not. The other thing is, she won't do a sit-down interview, and she was asked about it, like some reporters shouting. I think she said, like, well, we're trying to get one in 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
And we're trying to get one. I'm pretty sure nobody's going to tell you no.
Well, no, I mean, she's trying to, she didn't use those trying words, those are mine, but trying to arrange. And it's like, oh, it's going to take you 3 weeks to figure out what network reporter will be the easiest on you and make you look and take your like pre-fed questions.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, they both suck. I mean, I really have an absolute crisis in my brain when it comes to Donald Trump. Like, I'm so spastic about him. I'm going to vote for him still. That has not changed anything. But it's just like, I mean, how jacked up was I to vote for him a few weeks ago? And now I'm like, dude, where have you been? Yeah, like, less golfy, more campaigny. So anyway.
I hope people think of long term, too, because I think he gets in there and he's not running again. It'll just be that will be the end. 4 years and we're done with him. So let it. And he'll just 100%. Do good things and probably maybe keep his mouth a little bit more shut.
Maybe I find him funny now. I find him less annoying than I did. Now I find him kind of funny, but he does need to be more disciplined.
Exciting to me.
I didn't put this in the show, but can I just bring this up since it's local? So former chair of the Washington State Republican Party, Chris Vance. So he was the chair of the Republican Party here back when Trump was running for office. And I remember it very well. He came out with a pre-written statement saying that he did not support Donald Trump. And that's fine at the time. And at that time, I don't think a lot of Washington State Republicans did. Our Republicans are pretty moderate compared to nationally. But he did that. And then he became like a never Trumper, which again is fine. You do you. And then he ran 2 years ago as an independent for state Senate. He lost to Phil Fortunato, but he's an independent. He's made a big deal out of being an independent, being very anti the current Republican Party and Donald Trump. Well, he put out this video saying principled Republicans need to support Kamala Harris. And he said he's going to support Kamala Harris. He posted a selfie video of him at an Arizona rally for Kamala Harris saying something to the effect of, I'm Chris Vance, the former chair of the Washington State Republican Party, and I'm supporting Kamala Harris because principled Republicans need to. He's not a Republican anymore. And so even the Kamala Harris big accounts, they're retweeting it like, wow, former GOP chair endorsing Kamala Harris. He's not a Republican anymore. And that wasn't clear from the video. And I just want to point that out. And I put a screenshot out of the race where he ran as an independent. He's an independent. That's fine. But don't like be a Republican when it's politically convenient, when now Kamala Harris can say, oh, this Republican is supporting us. No, he's a never Trumper, independent. So that's not a big deal. But they're spinning it as like this tried and true blood red conservative supporting Kamala Harris. That's not what it is. So let's just be honest. I've had a pleasant relationship with Chris Vance over the years. I think he's been right on many of his criticisms of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. But don't pretend like you're a Republican. You're not a Republican. You, like me, are an independent. So it's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. Okay, we're going to get to questions, comments, our daily show poll coming up next. If you hear my stomach growling, I'm very hungry.
Could be mine as well.
And I woke up late and I rushed in here and I didn't eat anything. It's either Nicole or I's stomach's growling. We have teamed back up with Natchez RV Resort. One, because we really want you guys to buy lots at Natchez RV Resort and then invite Nicole and I to hang out, because we don't have RVs and I don't have the money for an RV, even though Mike really, really wants one. But Nicole's aunt bought a spot at Natchez RV Resort the first grand opening weekend. So they're doing their second round, their second grand opening weekend for their phase two lots, because they don't actually sell the lots until they're ready to go. They want you to be able to plug and play when they sell them to you. So that's happening August 24th and 25th. 18 extra large RV lots starting at just $79.9. Mike and I went out there and checked it out when they became a sponsor on our show.
It's so cool out there. They got so much stuff around there. They got pickleball courts, a playground, a dog park. There's miles of recreational trails. They were just finishing the saltwater swimming pool and spa. They were also just finishing, when we went out there, their 4,300 square foot great room, where it's got like a luxury clubhouse, exercise room, indoor and outdoor fireplace, gourmet kitchen. So if you've got friends over and you need more space to entertain, I mean, it's just a really cool area. So don't miss out on phase two grand opening pricing, August 24th and 25th. If you do buy a lot, one of the prerequisite requirements is that Nicole and I get invited at least once a year. And your aunt she bought her lot and she's like renting it out. They have a rental program, they do.
They do.
So if you're not out there actually using it, you can make money off of it. So $79.99 for right. lots, yeah, earn that money back quick.
Remember, they call that area the Palm Springs of Washington.
It's so beautiful out there.
It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. NatchesRVResort.com. NatchesRVResort.com. And through all of this, I have learned to properly pronounce Natchez. I had to reach out to some like state lawmakers out there like, hey, how do I say this? I have a real difficult time with anything with vowels in it. Somebody just told me, my friend Lisa, was like, hey, you know, I watch your show sometimes. I don't always agree with you, but you know, Lisa, she used to work at Cairo.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, I just want to let you know you're pronouncing Kamala Harris wrong. So apparently I say Kamala, mm-hmm. but it's Kamala. That's my A's. That's not intentional. I never want to intentionally mispronounce. So Lisa, I got you. It's Kamala.
Yeah.
Kamala.
Right.
I'm on it.
It's the Minnesota.
I'm learning. I'm growing. Trying. All right. Should we get to our daily subscriber show poll? Is that okay? Can we do that first before we dive into comments? So I asked you guys about this whole situation with the lawsuit. You know, the poll would assume that you guys had the information about it. But I asked whose job you think it was. I mean, to inform Let's Go Washington, who do you think had the primary duty to inform them? Legalese aside, whether it was defend Washington's legal responsibility or whatever. So I said, Bob Ferguson, Steve Hobbs, defend Washington or no one. A lot of you are saying Bob Ferguson. Let me see. Travis says, who would vote for no one? Every stinking member of that trio of Bob, Steve, and defend Washington should be arrested, jailed, or worse. Also, where are the other news outlets besides Lars on KVI? Nobody seems to be covering this. It's fascinating. Like, when Bob Ferguson does something that's inherently sketchy, it takes such a long time for the TV stations and like the Seattle Times to catch up on it.
Yeah, they just caught on to the ferry captain this weekend.
Yeah, I saw that. The TV stations, man. Mm-hmm. If you want, like, to hear about things first, this is the show.
That's right.
This is the show. I mean, we did the Maka Dingra stuff, and then it took 2 weeks for the mainstream news mm-hmm. to follow up on it. Then she lost her primary. We did the story last week on the ferry captain, like, going to his son's court hearing in uniform. Wild stuff. And then the news finally covered it over the weekend. So maybe let's give it 7 to 14 days. Maybe the news will talk about Bob Ferguson just leaving voters in the dark and saying, oh, you should have been monitoring court dockets. Let's see here. Mike H. says, both the AG's office and Secretary of State should have folks on staff whose sole job is to put out press releases about this sort of thing. Yeah, that's the other thing. No press releases. Like, Bob puts out press releases about legal actions and defending this all the time. This one? Not so much? Why not? I don't get it. Scott said, again, a big thank you, Brandy, for doing what you're doing. Thank you so much. And we've been getting a lot of new subscribers. So I appreciate all the new subscribers who joined us primary week and over the weekend. Your support is really appreciated and absolutely needed during this busy election year. Eric says, a FOIA inquiry for communications between Hobbs and Ferguson's would be very interesting to see, especially if it were available prior to the election. I saw my friend Ari Hoffman. That was like the first thing he did. He's like, I got my request in. They can't hide it from me. Although, I don't trust Bob. So the issue with this, and Bob Ferguson's office, which he has a really poor track record of transparency, is that there is an exception to public records requests for legal advice. So I guarantee you this is what Ari Hoffman will get back. Big pages that are just blacked out. And they'll say, this is exempt because it's legal advice. And we'll never know what's behind the black boxes. And they can just be very liberal with applying that. And we don't get to know anything. Wanna Move Mama says, I'm definitely not an attorney, but I would have thought the attorney for the defense would have deposed Let's Go Washington if for no other reason than to determine if there was any procedural information they might have to offer. If nothing else, it would have effectively gotten the information out to constituents, supposedly those of both Bob Ferguson and Hobbs, that trouble was brewing. In that aspect, it would be, in my opinion, primarily Ferguson's office's responsibility. Either way, it was a deliberate attempt to keep it under wraps, and that's not what we need from our elected officials. Want to move, Mama? I agree. Let's do one more here. George, our attorney general has a history of withholding evidence. We taxpayers have had to pay a number of fines for his office's illegal activities. I wouldn't expect him to change his ways now. I agree. It's just offensive, though, when he says, oh, should have been monitoring court dockets. What are you talking about? Or, oh, it wasn't our responsibility. It was defend Washington, technically speaking. That's fine. I'm not asking you in technical terms. Like, should you have just picked up the phone and let them know so Washingtonians weren't left in the dark? It's just the right thing to do. I know that's hard, Bob, for you to wrap your mind around. Sometimes you just do the right thing, right? Okay, let's see. Other questions in comments. Donut Lover AML says, I'm not a fan of the AG. However, successfully representing the Secretary of State's office for an initiative he doesn't like is a win. Oh, I agree. And I don't want to undercut the fact that they won this case, right? But that doesn't, and I just go back to, what if the result had been different? Can you imagine the firestorm around that? The questions about, why didn't you recuse yourself? People would have thought he threw the case intentionally. So it's just a matter of not putting the state and putting yourself and putting voters in a position to believe that something nefarious happened. So this is like, again, common sense. Why are you defending initiatives you don't support? And why are you defending a lawsuit that was funded by your campaign donor? You just don't, in the legal field, conflict of interest doesn't mean that someone is absolutely going to do something nefarious. It just means that there exists a conflict of interest. And for the reason of optics, more than anything else, that's why judges recuse themselves when they have a perceived conflict of interest, attorneys, etc. So it's just the right thing to do. Let me see. Captain Cranky Pants says, how is this not newsworthy enough for the mainstream media to cover? I don't see anything from King, Como, Fox, etc. I agree. Let's see here. Rick Johnson, it's like when Bob Ferguson was forced to represent Tim Iman in the car tabs. We saw how well that worked out. I mean, in a couple car tabs cases, he did successfully defend, because he has to defend the will of voters, right? But I agree. When you're not in support of something, you cannot be seen as being able to be fair. And we don't know if you're going to bring your A game or your B game or D or C, whatever, C or D. And then if you lose, like, people are going to have questions. On the San Francisco case, our friend Anton Volter said, I wonder why they're doing that. Oh, right. Quote, the 2024 San Francisco District Attorney election will be held on November 5th, 2024. Mm-hmm. Anton, good point. But they see I don't care what the reason is. Like, if they see the political winds shifting or whatever it is, hell, it still makes the same point to these protesters that, right, man, we might not want to do that next time because we could end up in prison on felony charges. But yeah, so much. I mean, look at Gavin Newsom down in California out there with his film crew picking up trash and acting like he's cared about the homeless crisis this entire time. It's because California looks like crap. Kamala Harris is from California, and he wants to act like, oh, all these positive headlines for California, so Kamala Harris won't be accused of Californication.
I also think apparently they had tried to do this before, but they couldn't get any people coming to them with stories of how they were trapped on that. They couldn't get any witnesses. Okay.
Victims.
Victims. There you go. So that's why this time they were able to. So, like, here, we also had the same problem. Maybe people weren't coming forward with their stories. Even though we were hearing rumors of stories, nobody was reaching out to legal folks to, like, share their stories. And so I think it might be the breaking point, right? Yep. So people are like, well, I support, I don't want to go against the protesters, whatever. But now they're reaching their breaking point and actually coming forward and saying, like, enough.
Yeah, pre-op appointment for a brain tumor.
Right. Like,
no politics is going to override your anger over that.
Peeing in your car.
Your child out of formula. But I think the key here, peed in the car?
You would have had to pee in the car.
You know what? I would have marched up to the line
and I would have
somehow peed on them. I don't know how I would have worked that out. It's much different for women, in case you don't know. It's harder. Mm-hmm. But I think the key in San Francisco is, it sounded like, because they were there trapped for a long time, that the California Highway Patrol was actively going out taking reports.
Right.
So that's what they should have done here, too, is you go car to car. you know, would you like to, you know, like file a complaint or whatever it is and get their stories about what's happening? So you do that in the moment. I think people would be much more willing to, hell yeah, here's what I'm doing. Here's where I'm supposed to go, blah, blah, blah. So good for the California Highway Patrol for having the wherewithal or the what's the word I'm looking for? Foresight? To do that?
Sure.
I don't know. I can't think of my words today. What's different than any other day?
Just for doing it.
Let's see here. Brian Bloomer with a $5 super chat. I lived in WAV from 91 to 2000. I loved it. Laws were common sense and politicians were mostly open-minded. I walked at night without fear. When did it change?
You know what? We were talking about that with Scott Walker. He was saying this used to be
a swing state.
That was actually in play. And I don't even remember that. Was, I mean, I was probably in school, but I wasn't paying attention to that. So, wow.
I would say, just from my perspective, when I moved here 15 years ago, I agree with all of those sentiments. I think, like, around the Ed Murray era, just on the tail end of the Ed Murray era, I think you really started to see this, like, giving in to sort of the alt-left socialist fringe. So it happened slowly at first, and then after there was some building there and they'd given in so many times to these loud voices, then it was like rapid decline from there. Robert Parker with a $5 super chat. Best part of the show is when Brandy and Nicole split the screen to drill down on a subject. Thank you. I like that too. Stacey Zerinsky.
It's like when I defend Trump.
That's true.
I swear.
They're like, Brandy's talking about Trump again. Bring on Nicole. Well, Nicole's like defending his honor. That's fine, you know.
I know.
Stacey says, it's been 23 days, zero questions for Kamala from the media. No, after, it was a few days ago, last week, like late last week, remember J.D. Vance like walked over on the tarmac in front of Kamala's plane to the media? Like, why isn't she taking your questions? The next day, she stopped and took like three questions and they were just the most softball questions. And then she walked away. So she's taken a couple. But don't you think if you'd had that many pent up questions, you would have said like, oh my God, let me ask her like a hard question. No, it was ridiculous. Let me see here. D, my father-in-law said he wants 4 years of Democrat-controlled House, Senate, and White House. He just wants to see what happens and see how the country would fare if they can push through their policies. I reminded him that here in Washington State, they had a trifecta for the last 7 years. He didn't have much to say after that. Good for you, D. Spreading the truth. Spreading the good word. All right. Good questions and comments per the usual. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. President Biden. Yes, Biden is still the president of the United States. I know we haven't seen or heard a lot from him, but he did an interview on CBS News where he was talking and asked about what happens if Donald Trump wins in November. And he had a little bit of a Freudian slip, I think.
Actually, it's if he was asked, like, what do you think about the transfer of power?
Okay.
But then the Freudian slip.
Okay, let's watch.
Are you confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025?
If Trump wins, no, I'm not confident at all. I mean, if Trump loses, I'm not confident at all.
Yeah, I'm telling you right now, if Trump wins, Democrats will be very, very quick to question the results of the election. They might even become election deniers. We'll see how fast they flip. All right, that has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you to all our wonderful subscribers who support the show. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A reminder of Freedom Fest, Summer Freedom Fest coming up this Saturday. We'll keep reminding you about that every day on the show.
They really need volunteers. So
they really need volunteers. So go to letsgowa.com and click on events, and then you can find out ways to volunteer at Summer Freedom Fest. We will be there. Even my sweet husband will be there. I love bringing him to events, but then everybody likes him more than me. And when he's not at events, people are like, where's Mike? Where's Mike? Where's Mike? And I'm like, am I chopped liver? What's going on here? But anyway, so we have a few events coming up, actually, we'll let you guys know about on the show. Nicole's like, we're running out of music. Brandy, close the show. Go to undividedpod.com. Subscribe for just $5 a month. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Happy? No. Boop.